Test one, testing one. 1, 2. We need some monitor, please. Down in the Tennessee hill, there ain't no smoggy smoke on Rocky Top, there ain't no telephone bill. Once I had a girl on Rocky Top, half bear, the other half cat, wild as a mink and sweet as sody pop, and I still dream about that. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Rock Top, Tennessee, Rock Top, Tennessee. Once two strangers climbed a Rocky Top looking for a moonshine still. Strangers didn't come down from Rocky Top, reckon they never will. Now corn won't grow at all on Rocky Top, dirt's too rocky by far. That's why all the folks on Rocky Top drink their corn from a jar. Rock Top, Tennessee, Rock Top, Tennessee. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Thank you. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Thank you. Give him a hand.
Chain. Oh, they call me my number, not a name, Lord, Lord. Gotta do my time.
Time.
Gotta do my
time.
But they can't hard and they worry. That old judge looks down and smiles. Says, I put you on that good book for a while, Lord, Lord. Gotta do my time. Gotta do my time. But it ain't hard and I worry.
Time.
I do my
time.
But it ain't hard, and I worry not. Just a few more days. I settle down and quit my lousy ways, Lord, Lord. With that gal of mine. With that gal of mine. She'll be waiting for me when I've done my time.
Thank you very much.
There we go. Let's give the band another hand. It's a remarkable fact that this is the first time that these little cloggers from Altoona have danced with a live band, and they didn't even rehearse together. Let's give them another hand for that. Now, we were wondering where Altoona was. Of course, I knew where Altoona was all the time, down there nestled in citrus country, beautiful hills. But I wonder if you know where the Metro Dade area is. Well, that's just way down at the jumping off place in Florida, the Miami area, Dade County area, where we have so many exciting new Floridians and new Americans. And they are here today, and they are in the area by Nellie Bly's Kitchen with all sorts of exciting things, with the dance, with music, with the crafts, with the foods, and that is something that you just must not miss. And just last week, Jim Billy, who is the president of the Seminole Tribal Council of Florida, brought a crew up, and they built a brand new Seminole Indian camp down near the food shelter, near the old marble stage. That is something that you must not miss. We never have a Florida Folk Festival without those wonderful first citizens of Florida, our Seminoles. And to have the chief here is an honor indeed. Now, Curly Deacle hasn't been coming quite as long as I have to the Florida Folk Festival, but almost as long. And he has a distinguishing feature in that he is a real honest-to-goodness, sure enough, inside out, Florida cracker. And without more ado, I want to introduce my friend and your friend, Cousin Curly Deacle.
I'm Curly Deacle. Is this mic on that I can talk to you? I'm Curly Deacle, and I'm an original Florida cracker. I'd like to give you a little history of the, what have we called Florida crackers? How many Florida crackers do we have here? How about that? How many Georgia crackers we have here? Well, we got a few Georgia crackers too. Well, when anybody calls you a Florida cracker, that is a compliment. A lot of you folks don't know that, and a lot of our friends from way off in different distance, like the Buckeye State and the Hoosiers and all those, they don't really know what this means. But the Florida cracker, they originated many, many years ago when this country was first settled. Now, the second trip that the Spaniards made over here, they brought cattle with them, and Florida was thickly... It was dense, a lot of catclaw briars and palmettos and scrub oaks and a little bit of everything else. And when they settled in St. Augustine is the oldest city, and the little communities branched out from them. And mentioned a moment ago, the second trip that the Spaniards made over here, they brought cattle with them. And they would use these cattle in the little communities for their dairy products, and they also used them for their fertilizer crops. They would pin them up. Some of you old-timers remember the little cow pens. We'd pin the cows up at night. We called it the new ground. That's where we planted the potatoes. Well, this is where it really started. And in the afternoon, the cowboys would bring the cows in from out of the woods. They'd let them roam the woods, not like they do today because they got them all fenced in. But they used to just roam the woods. And in the afternoon, they would bring them in for the ladies to milk. Sometimes the cow pens was a quarter of a mile from the house, just wherever they was going to plant the next garden, that's where they pen the cows up at night. So when the cowboys would be bringing the cows in, there was so much underbrush until you couldn't see them until they got right close up, and they could hear those whips popping. They could hear those whips cracking. I can take one of these whips and pop it, and you can hear it a mile away sometime on a cool afternoon. And they could hear those whips popping. And they would, instead of saying, the cowboys are bringing the cows in to be milked. You know us Southerners, we love to slow things down a little bit, see? Instead of saying, the cowboys are bringing the cows in to be milked, they'd just say, the crackers are coming. They could hear those whips cracking. They'd say, the crackers are coming. So the ladies would get their milk buckets, and they'd meet the boys down at the cow pens, and they'd milk the cows and pin them up for the night and turn them loose the next morning. Next day was the same thing. So this is the way the Florida cracker got started, actually. And when anybody calls you a Florida cracker, I love it, because the old Florida crackers originated when the old cattle industry many, many years ago. So that's the story of the whip cracking. Now I'm going to give you a little demonstration of the fancy whip popping in just a minute here. I better move away from some of these wires. Thank you. You heard the story about Buffalo Bill? Buffalo Bill, there's a little kid remembers Buffalo Bill. That's the first kid I ever seen in my life that remembered Buffalo Bill. But anyway, Buffalo Bill was credited with stopping a lot of gunfights. And the history tells us. Now, folks, Cousin Thelma Bolden is one of the finest ladies in the world. And I've been knowing Cousin Thelma a long, long time. Now, Cousin Thelma met Buffalo Bill personally one time. I never did meet him. But Cousin Thelma did. She met Buffalo Bill one time. And Cousin Thelma helped me get the history on what I'm fixing to do now. Buffalo Bill, when he come in off of the buffalo hunt, they would make the buffalo hunters stand their guns in the corner and go in for the barroom for a little snort. Well, a lot of times they'd get kind of rowdy in the barroom. And Buffalo Bill could take his bullwhip and he could fire those guns, those old muzzle-loading guns sitting around in the corner. He could fire some of those guns by hitting the trigger with his whip. And it would create so much excitement until they'd forget all about the fight. And history tells us that actually this is a true story. Now I'm going to show you how Buffalo Bill did that. I'll get my buffalo. I'm Buffalo Bill now.
And I know you went and got some nice little things to eat in the food booth fun. And I hope you've been up to Metro Dade area to see what's going on there. And I do hope that everybody in the park has bought one of the beautiful programs without which I don't see you can, how you can move around. But in the meantime, it's 1 o'clock and it's time to begin the afternoon program. And we have a lovely surprise. We have a queen of a storyteller, Jennifer Bowden from Longwood. That's down nudging, Orlando. And let's welcome her to the stage without more ado. Jennifer.
Thank you very much for the warm welcome. Before I begin sharing a story with you today, I do want to mention to you what a privilege and an honor it is for me to be introduced by Cousin Thelma Bolden. For some of you young people especially, I'm not sure if you know much about the history of storytelling and the revitalization and reawakening of the interest in storytelling in this country. I've been telling professionally for a little over 4 years, and when you're a serious storyteller and a serious student of folklore, one of the first things you do is affiliate yourself with the National Association for the Preservation and Perpetuation of Storytelling in Tennessee. Over 4 years ago, I went to the National Association to view some archive films. They have some of the oldest films and videotapes of well-known storytellers working in the country today and some who are no longer living. That's the first time I saw Cousin Thelma Bolden, and when I saw her videotape, I thought, that woman is the best teller of Uncle Remus tales I have ever seen anywhere in this country. I've now been telling stories for almost 5 years, go to a lot of festivals, work with a lot of storytellers, and hear many, many people tell stories. And for my money, she is still the best teller of Uncle Remus tales I have ever had the privilege to hear. I just want you young people to know that she is indeed an important and irreplaceable part of Florida folklore, and you're very fortunate to have her with you here for this festival. Cousin Thelma Bolden. Thank you. I'm a collector of Southern folk tales. I've lived in Tennessee, North Carolina, and Mississippi, so I love a good Southern folk tale, and I'd like to share one with you now. A long, long time ago, there lived a little gal whose name was Lou Bell. Lou Bell lived alone with her mama in a cabin down by the Suwannee River, right where it comes out of the Okefenokee Swamp in South Georgia. That little girl loved to play down alongside that river. She could spend hour after hour down there playing in the mud and in the water. She liked to take flat rocks and she'd skip them across the water. She liked to make little boats out of palmetto leaves and watch them float down the river in the hot afternoon sun. One day I want to tell you about little Lou Bell was down by the edge of the Suwannee and she was playing. She was making mud pies. She went to turn over a rock to get some real good wet, mucky mud. to make herself a mud pie, and when she did, she uncovered a little black snake. Now, no bigger than a worm it was, but she took that little snake. Now, most young'uns would have been a scared of that snake, but not little Lubelle. She picked it up, and she let it crawl up her arm. She let that snake crawl down her arm. She was having the best time with that little snake. She even took it and put it in her pocket. She played with that snake all day long, and natural, by the end of the day, she wanted to take that snake home with her, so she did. Now, when she got back to her mama's cabin, she had to sneak that snake in the door past her mama, who was working in the kitchen. She took that snake and run in her room, and she hid it up in the closet. And that night, after she was finished eating, she took a little piece of lettuce and a little piece of green bean, and she snuck it off in the room there, and she fed her snake up in that closet. Now, every time Lubelle ate, three times a day, she snuck some food off the table and went in there and fed that there snake of hers. Now, you know what'll happen to a snake if you feed him three times a day, day after day after day? He's going to get longer. He's going to get fatter. He's going to get bigger. And Lubelle would go to that closet door, and she'd call that snake to her, and she'd stand there and say, "Woo-wee, ain't nobody got a bigger snake than mine, no siree." Now, all she had to do in the world was keep that snake a secret from her mama. Now, little Lubelle, there was only one thing in the world wrong with that young'un, and she was as lovable and as dear as could be. But I want to tell you, that child was, she was downright dirty. She loved to keep a dirty room. I mean, her room would be so dirty that she could have to, sometimes it'd take her nigh on about 2 hours to kick her way through all the clothes all over the floor. Clothes from floor to ceiling, wall to wall. And in her room, her windows was so dingy and covered with dirt, it'd been so many years since they'd been washed, you couldn't even tell daylight in that room. In Lubelle's room, it was always night. Now, that child, you know how some of you, maybe your mama's in the morning, they'll lay out your clothes or even help you button and snap on your clothes. Well, Lubelle, the way she picked out what she was going to wear on any given day, when she woke up in the morning, she'd fling one arm out over the edge of the bed, and she'd feel around there in the dark till her hand lit on something, and she'd put that on, and that's what she'd wear off to school that day. This child was a mess. Now, you know how your mamas will keep after you when you don't keep your room up. Well, Lubelle's mama was no exception. She'd keep after her. One day she'd say, "Lubelle, I ain't gonna tell you but one more time, young lady. You get in there and clean up that room of yours." Lubelle'd say, "Yes, mama." But she'd find something better to do and go out in the backyard and mess around back there. A couple days later, her mama'd get after her again. She'd say, "Lubelle, if I have to tell you one more time." And Lubelle'd say, "Yes, mama, I'll do it." But Lubelle would slip out the back door, and down by the edge of the river she'd go. That child could spend hour after hour playing on the edges of that river, but she couldn't find no time for cleaning up that room. One day, Lubelle's mama was walking down the hallway, and that child had left her door open about yay much, and her mama smelled the most awful smell coming out of that room. Woo-wee! She stopped and looked in that room and could not believe the mess what was in that young'un's room. She hollered, "Lubelle, get in here this minute." Lubelle come a running from the yard. She could tell when mama meant business. She come in there, and her mama grabbed her by the arm and said, "Young lady, we're cleaning this your room today. You hear me?" She took Lubelle by the arm, and she dragged her through that room, kicking all them clothes out of her way. Went over to the other wall where she knew there had to be a window up there somewhere, and her mama started knocking around there on the wall until, sure enough, under that dirt, there was a glass window. She went and got Lubelle a 5-gallon bucket full of water and filled it full of apple cider vinegar water, got that young'un a great big armload of washing rags, took her over there to where that window was. She gave her that bundle of rags and said, "Now, young lady, I want you cleaning this here window until the sun comes shining through. You hear me?" Lubelle said, "Yes, mama." She could tell she wasn't going to get out of it that day, so she commenced to washing. Lubelle took a rag and she dumped it around there in that bucket. She slopped some of that water up there and she started washing. And legions of dirt was coming off that window. Armies of dirt was marching off that window onto her rag and into that bucket where she was trying to clean. She scrubbed a while, and in a little bit, she could just make out the outline of the sun on the other side of that window. Well, that encouraged her, so she got some more water, and she scrubbed a little longer, and pretty soon, one little beam of light come through that window and landed right on the window pane. Woo-wee, this was working. So Lubelle, by now, she had a bucket full of nothing but mud off that window. She took it out in the backyard, and she chunked it out and got herself another bucket full of clean water, put some apple cider vinegar water in it, went into her room, and she wrenched that window off real good. Wrenched it off twice and then three times, and sure enough, in a little bit, the sun comes streaming through that window and lit up that room like a candle lighting up a dark cave. But I want to tell you the sight what met her mama's eyes. Her mama was standing in the middle of that room, and she looked around the ceiling, and all around the ceiling of that young'un's room was cobwebs hanging thick as grandma's lace. She looked over in one corner, and there was a pile of bones over there where Lubelle'd been feeding that old snake. It looked like a burial ground or something to her mama. Mama went over to the bed, and the sheets was so black and slick, dirty. She took the sheets off that bed, went out in the backyard, and she set fire to them, never even tried to wash them up. Mama come back in that room, and she commenced to chucking things out of that room, throwing things out into the hallway left and right. And eventual, her mama made her way over to that closet door. And when she did, Lubelle commenced to hollering. She said, "Oh, no, Mama, don't go in yonder." And her mother looked at her and said, "Lubelle, what in the world's the matter with you, young'un? Out of my way." And pushed her out of the way. Then her mama took hold to that closet door. She opened that closet door up, and when she did, every manner of box and shell and old shoe come flying down out of that closet, nearly knocking that mama to the floor. Her mama got in that closet, and by now she was in a cleaning frenzy. She started throwing out old shells and birds' nests, all these things that Lubelle had collected all her young life, throwing them out in the hallway. But I want to tell you something. When that woman turned over the box under which that big old snake was hiding, she let out a holler. Even the frogs sitting down on the Suwannee River bank, they hushed up to hear what in the world was going on. Her mama got in there and she said to herself, "Lord have mercy, look at here, my child, living in this den of dirt and iniquity and keeping a snake in her closet. Oh, Lord, don't let that thing bite me." And so her mama run out to the barn and got her sharpest edge corn chopping hoe. Come back in that room, and little Lubelle ran across the room. She flung her arms up against the door jamb, and she said, Mama, please, Mama, he's my friend." But her mama wasn't about to listen. Her mama pushed Lubelle out of the way, got in that closet, took that corn chopping hoe. She took bead on that old sneaky snake's neck, come down one chop, chomp. And that snake snooked no more. But that's not the end of this here story. Lubelle's mama took that snake out behind the house, down by the edge of the Suwannee River, and she buried that snake in a watery grave. And then she come up in the house, and it was now about supper time, so she went in the kitchen and fixed up some supper. And then she called for Lubelle. She said, "Lubelle, darling, come on, your supper's on the table." Lubelle didn't come out of her room. Her mama gave her a few minutes, and when Lubelle hadn't come out, she called around the corner, "Lubelle, now come on, honey, supper's on the table." And Lubelle didn't come. Her mama went in the room, and there lay Lubelle down on her face on her bed, and she was crying her little heart out. Her shoulders was just a-heaving. Her mama sat down there, and she said, "Now, Lubelle, you knew you couldn't keep a snake in the house. What's the matter with you?" Lubelle wouldn't listen to her mama. That night when her mama went to bed, you know, mama thought to herself, "Well, that child's just going to have to get over losing that old snake. I sure enough wasn't going to let him stay in this here house." But when she tried to sleep all night long, every once in a while she'd wake up and she'd hear Lubelle in there crying and crying her little heart out. And it night about broke her mama's heart to hear her carry on so about old black snake, mind you. Next morning her mama thought to herself, "Well, she needs something to perk her up. I'll make her favorite breakfast." Lubelle loved pecan pancakes better than anything else for breakfast, so her mama made them up for her. She even heated up the syrup for her, and then she called, "Lubelle, come on, darling, I made your favorite breakfast, pecan pancakes." Lubelle didn't come out of her room. Her mother waited a few moments, and then she called, "Lubelle, you're going to be late for school. Get out here, young lady." Lubelle didn't come out. Her mama went up in the room and turned her little girl over, and Lou Belle's eyes were all red and puffed up where she'd been grieving and crying over that old snake all night long. And her mama sat down there and took her little hand in hers, and she said, "Lou Belle, darling, you're just being plumb silly. You can't carry on like that about an old black snake. He couldn't stay in this house forever, Lou Belle." Lou Belle didn't even look at her mama in the face. Mama let her lay in the bed there all day, and at the end of the day, her mama thought to her, "You know, she just needs something to take her mind off her grieving. I'll make her some new curtains." So the next day, her mama went to the Five and Dime, and she bought some beautiful red calico with yellow flowers on it, and she made her brand new curtains and hung them up at the window, and that room was so clean and fresh smelling by now, Lou Belle didn't even look at the curtains. The next day, her mama thought, "You know, I wonder if when I was in there cleaning up that room, if I stirred up some germs or something, and that's what's making my baby sick." So her mama went and boiled some water. She took lye soap, and as hot as she could stand that water, she went in there and she scrubbed that room from wall to wall, floor to ceiling, with a wire brush. The next day come, and Lou Belle wasn't any better. Her mother thought, "I know what I'll do. I'll make her a new play pretty. She just needs something else to love on." So she made her two corn husk dolls, and she put dresses on them made out of that same red and yellow calico that the curtains were made out of. And she put them in there lovingly beside Lou Belle laying in the bed. Lou Belle rolled over and pushed them out on the floor, wanted nothing to do with them. 5 days passed and 6 days passed, and Lou Belle lay up in the bed, and finally her mama went to the village and asked the doctor to come out and look at her. He come out and look at her. He said it wasn't nothing but her pine, and there wasn't nothing wrong with her, but he told her how to use persimmon wine. He told her how to give her a prescription 3 times a day, and he told her a poultice to make up and have her smell it in her room all the time, and mama tried everything. And on the 8th day, Lou Belle's mama got up, and she thought, "This is ridiculous. My child pining away over old black snake. I'm not going to put up with it." She went in the room, and she got her child up out of the bed. She tried to make her stand. But after 8 days, Lou Belle's little legs were so weak, she couldn't even stand on her own 2 legs. 9 days passed, and 10 days passed. And on the 11th day, on a night when the moon was shining white and full over the Suwannee River, that little girl lay in her bed with the river flowing by her house as slow as molasses. At midnight, her skin turned completely white and cracked all over. And before daybreak, her skin had peeled off her body just like old black snake shedding his skin in the spring. And when Lou Belle's mama come in the room the next morning, there wasn't nothing else to do but bury her baby. She took her, she wrapped her up in a winding cloth, and they took her down by the edge of the Suwannee River, where they buried her in a watery grave right along that old black snake she had loved so much. And now, if you go visit that spot in South Georgia, they tell me you're going to see growing up there the most beautiful blackberry vine you ever seen in your life. And Lou Belle, they say she's the blackberries, and that old snake, he's the thorns. And they say if you want to taste the sweetest blackberry you ever bit into, what they call up there a bluebell berry, you're going to have to stand way up on your tiptoes, and you're going to have to reach real high to the top of that old vine to get you a bluebell berry. But you better watch out for them thorns. Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. I can tell that you all enjoyed that so much. Give her another hand.
Ben Chitama and Cedar Lane to come to the car immediately. They know where it is. Ben Chitama and Cedar Lane.
Cedar Lind?
Lane.
Ben Chipana and Cedar Lind need to go to the car immediately.
Ben and Cedar, just say Ben.
Ben and Cedar, go to the car immediately.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I am very thrilled to be able to introduce the next performer. He is one of Florida's finest and foremost original songwriters. He comes to us from Tampa, and he has some terrific songs for children and for adults. Please welcome Bobby Hicks. Oh, I'm sorry, and Nancy Davidson is going to help him out.
Oh. I love the sunshine, but wow. It is a little warm out here, isn't it?
No.
Is the sun hot on y'all? I was going to move the mics back, but if you're going to sit in the sun, I'll stand in the sun, all right? But we need to move closer here. Well, yeah.
We just need to be a lot closer.
I always get the shortest mics, and Nancy gets the tall ones.
Okay. Wow, that one's about to fall out.
I should have hit it with a screwdriver, I guess. That means just about the middle of the song, so I'll straighten it. Play yours, right here. Is this mic hot?
Sure.
Can you move that a little closer?
What? What do you want me? Want to be closer to you?
That's all right.
You sure? We'll try it like this. Well, go on and move yours closer now. See, we have this thing. The closer we are together, the more chance of me staying in key. Nancy. Makes me stay in key.
That's so, right.
In case any of you haven't seen me since last year, I'm usually the fat boy with a beard and long hair and a big hat. But this year I'm doing it without the beard, I'm doing it without the long hair, and I'm doing it without the hat. So,
a new image.
And I'm doing it without 25 pounds I had with me last year. So. This song I wrote about all the things that Florida was, is, always will be, long after bumper boulders that are down here from the winter from Detroit go back in the spring. It's called I'm Florida, Need I Say More? I guess I'm a little bit of everything. Seen so many flags unfurled. Someone still remembers me. They come to see us from all over the world. I'm the Spanish moss hanging from the live oak trees. I'm what's left of the panther and the old manatee. I'm an eagle in flight behind the ocean's roar. I'm Florida, need I say more? I'm Florida, need I say more? Nancy's still teaching this song to me. I'm the ghost of a Spaniard at the fountain of youth, in old Augustine by the sea. Down around Brighton, I'm a Seminole Indian who somehow through it all still walks free. I'm the sunburned face on that old Key West calm, drinking hurricanes down on Duval Street. I'm a tarpon jumping down in Chokoloskee where the Gulf and the Everglades meet. I'm the coat of gray my great-grandfather wore when in the fields at a lusty he fought. I'm the roar of the Cameron Sons mill at McCoochie, as vanished as the cypress they saw. Appalachian oysters, and I'm Crystal Springs. I'm Cousin Thelma Bolton, and I'm Will McLean. I'm Forest Green, and I'm Golden Shores. I'm Florida, need I say more? I'm Florida, need I say more? I'm the weathered skin of the Arcadian cowboy, riding fence on Mike's brother's herds, or a canoe trip down the Myakka where the gator's still left undisturbed. Brain Carl's still alive out in old Tampa Bay in a secret place my brother and I know. I'm the citrus getting ripe in the sunshine in Ben Hill Griffin's frostproof grove. Waters once clear as a swimming pool, though fewer than there used to be. Though it'll never be like yesterday, you can still catch a fish safe to eat. So take a look around me, I'm sure you'll agree. Florida's the best of the land of the free. All of good life right here at our door. I'm Florida, need I say more? I'm Florida, need I say more? I'm a Spaniard, and I'm Frenchman, and I'm British, and I'm Indians. I'm forest, and I'm swamplands, opportunities for all men. Proud as can be when I roar. I'm Florida, need I say more? I'm Florida, need I say more? You notice I mentioned a lot of parts in Florida and that, but I did not mention the Suwannee River. So I wrote a song about the Suwannee, and I called it the Suwannee. It works out that way, you know. It's called "The Suwannee Flows Deep in My Heart." Beautiful day. Up in the Georgia Pines, where the waters first flow, down through White Springs, a place most of us know. Then it's on across Florida to the Gulf of Mexico. The Suwannee flows deep in my heart. Her natural beauties always have seemed to be such a treasure, this wondrous stream. As she wanders through legends, songs, poems, and dreams, oh, the Suwannee flows deep in my heart. What have we left for the ones that we're leaving? Perhaps some old memories they won't be believing. So maybe some snapshots, it'll start them in the grieving. For the Suwannee that flows deep in my heart. God bless Cousin Thelma, she remembers back when a sweeter, cleaner water still flowed round the bend. To some just a river, but to us an old friend is the Suwannee that flows deep in my heart. Will McLean sings about Florida sand. Don Grooms and Jim Billy about the Indian man. All right, finally got one 6 feet tall. While me and Whitey Markle are still trying to make a stand for the Suwannee that flows deep in my heart. What have we left for our sons and our daughters? You can take lots of pictures, but don't drink the water. Big business calls it progress, but crackers call it slaughter of the Suwannee that flows deep in my heart. How I wish I could turn the clocks back before industrial parks with their factory stacks, before they mine the damn phosphates and our waters turn black. Oh, the Suwannee, she flows deep in my heart. What have we left for the ones that we're leaving? Perhaps some old memories they won't be believing. So maybe some snapshots will start them in the grieving. For the Suwannee that flows deep in my heart. What have we left for our sons and our daughters? You can take lots of pictures, but don't drink the water. Big business calls it progress, but crackers call it slaughter of the Suwannee that flows deep in my heart. Any of y'all know anything about the moon shining through the pines will probably appreciate the song. Anybody that knows anything about the moon shining in the pines in North Florida will understand the song. By moonshine, we're not talking about starlight, folks. We're talking about that stuff, what you drank a little bit of, you feel better than you ever have. You drank too much of it, feel worse than you ever will. About a friend of mine makes a little good liquor up in Northwest Florida. I think I said that right, Northwest Florida. So when I say Northern Florida, I'm not speaking of the Gainesville, you know, to Georgia area. I'm talking about Northwestern Florida. But I have a hard enough time spitting out enough words into my lines, so I had to drop Western from it. You ready for this? Yeah. It's called Grayton Jackson. Way up in Northern Florida, not far from Alabama, was great in Jackson. He's a Florida backwoods man. Like three daddies come before him, makes his living off the land. Knows them old pine woods like the back of his calloused hand. I was cruising old Highway 90 in the heat of a July day. I seen an old Jimmy broken down just east of Bonifay. I offered the driver up a ride. He answered with a smile. That's a long way to Miller Crossroads, but I'll make it worth your while. I said I was on vacation, just out to clear my mind. I'd have left my watch in Tampa. I wasn't pressed at all for time. Said Tampa's a long, long way from here. I've never been south of Perry. He stopped to take a sip from a pocket glass of care. He offered me that bottle. He said, this here ain't store-bought, but it's good for what ails you from arthritis to whooping cough. So being the fool that I am, well, I take some big old sip, and I turn so as not to burn him with the flames coming from my lips, singing, sometimes it ain't so bad, sometimes it ain't so good. I take it all in stride, cause my living's in the wood. Ain't got much crime or violence, and we never had no drugs, but the moon comes through the pines and mason jars and gallon jugs. They said that's Jackson whiskey, but they're making it 100 years. I was trying hard to hear him through the buzzing in my ears. He said, you got to learn to sip it, son, and set you right on fire. I figure it's about 190 proof, and it just don't get much higher. By now, I was breathing normal again. In fact, I was feeling fine. First time my sinuses had been clear since 1969. Well, he started looking around my van when he noticed my guitar case. Said, you'll have to do us a tune when we get out to my place. Said life gets pretty busy with a wife and 7 kids. Never had to look back twice on anything I did. If my family's needing something or I'm lacking a little cash, I just runs off in the pines and I runs a little sour mash, singing, sometimes it ain't so bad, sometimes it ain't so good. I takes it all in stride, cause my living's in the wood. Ain't got much crime or violence, and we never had no drugs. Comes through the pines and mason jars and gallon jugs. That crossroads was more just a place on the map than it was any kind of a town. Might as well have been blindfolded for all the roads led me down. Well, we finally come to Graydon's place out in the old pine woods. I realized that in 100 years the Jacksons had done good. As if he could read my mind, he said I'd better explain. We got a lot of money when they needed our land for the train. But Daddy never let it change him. Said a man needs to work for a living. And who could want anything more than what this land's been given? So we put the money on back, in case the kids ever want to get away. Good enough for my daddy's good enough for me, so I just reckon I'll stay singing. Sometimes it ain't so bad, sometimes it ain't so good. I takes it all in stride, cause my living's in the wood. Ain't got much crime or violence, and we never had no drugs. But the moon comes through the pines and mason jars and gallon jugs. I stayed with them almost a week, by then I could understand why a man with $1 million still scratch a living from the land. He had 7 kids that loved him, and his wife set the table well. I'd tell you if it got any better than this, and God would have kept it for himself, singing, sometimes it ain't so bad, sometimes it ain't so good. I takes it all in stride, cause my living's in the wood. Ain't got much crime or violence, and we never had no drugs. But the moon comes through the pines and mason jars and gallon jugs. Way up in northern Florida, not far from Alabama, this great Jackson, he's a Florida backwoods man. Like three daddies come before him, makes his living off the land. Mind his own damn business, but he'll help you if he can. Thelma's gonna make an announcement, then let us do one more song.
Jimmy, this is an announcement to Jimmy Jacobs that the two little lost boys.
I grew up down on Tampa Bay. I was born down there, and my family lives down there, so it was real handy to grow up down there. When I was about 11 years old, I'd ride down the shrimp docks, work all day Saturday on the boats, clean them up, working on them, whatever. They'd give me $3 or $4 in cash, and all the shrimp my bicycle basket would carry, I'd go back home, my brother would beat me out of the money, my mother would take the shrimp from me. Only thing I was left with were the memories of the people I'd met down there. Some of them I ran to later on in life around other parts of Florida and stuff. This is about one of them who became a really close friend of mine. I lost him about 7 years ago, so... This called Zachariah Creech was an old Gulf shrimper. Zachariah Creech wasn't just another shrimper. Doctor spoke at Cedar Key. A few things about him made him a little different than those other sons of the sea. He trawled the Gulf since he was 10 years old, from Tortuga to Tampico, and done some time back in 29 hauling whiskey out of Port St. Joe. Yeah, he looked to be as old as the water that it etched his face and lines. The Gulf was his mother, the wind was his father, and Zachariah Creech was a friend of mine. I used to see him at the docks in Crystal River, the bars down in Tarpon Springs. Drank Canadian mist neath the moon of silver, at night sometimes he'd sing. He sang of the days when the money came easy, it had a family and a home. Well, then he sang of a hurricane that came, left old Zach alone. He carried the loss upon his shoulder from that storm back in 33. He drowns the sorrow in the whiskey, the sun and the wind and the sea. He reminisced about days on Tampa Bay, back when a shrimper still had respect. He said a man of the sea was somebody then, you could judge him by the way he run his neck. It's a dying art, he used to tell me, one nobody wants to learn it all anymore. But nowadays it's all electronics, they used to rape the ocean's floor. He said, I only trawled enough to make a living, but now they're making 3 trips to Mwan. They're taking a lot more than the water is giving, won't be nothing left at all when they're done. He handed me down his old guitar, he gave the bottle another pull. Said, all I need are the sun and the stars, and every once in a while my belly to be full. Besides, I'm one man to call an old man, I've lived more than I got left. Write a song for me and the sons of the sea, so those who care will not forget. He said, write about the old Gulf fisherman, how we held out as long as we could. Those of us that fish by instinct, build our boats out of wood. I sat down with my fountain pen, I tried to capture his life in my lines, about a man of the sea born in Steinhatchee. He died on his boat back in 79. He was a different kind of a sailor, a different sea from a different time. Zachariah Creech was an old Gulf shrimper. Zachariah Creech was a friend of mine. Thank you very much, everybody. Appreciate y'all listening.